From the InfoWars.com studios, it's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, July 23rd, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. You know, it's kind of interesting as we talk about stories for years and years. Well, conspiracy theory. Of course, the Democrats have plenty of their own conspiracy theories. They're doubling down with these, even as the evidence is mounting as to what they actually did. It's absolutely amazing. I keep saying it. You know, when Megyn Kelly was here, it's like, did you see my interview with Putin? It's like, I'm not worried about Putin. I'm worried about Clapper, Brennan, Comey, Hayden, all these guys. They're the ones who have the power. They're the ones who are so involved in our lives. You want to talk about the Dirty Dozen and $5,000 worth of ads that they bought on Google and maybe a couple of thousand out of a couple of billion ads on Facebook? They didn't have any effect. Rosenstein even said they didn't have any effect. But they continue to double down these conspiracy theories. We'll look at some of this, some of the latest stuff that came out of FISA. But when I look at this other information that is coming out, genetic modification, problems with vaccines in China that the government is openly censoring, don't talk about that. No, don't worry. It's okay. The vaccine really didn't get out in the wild and so forth. But also some some genetic modification via an antibiotic to make mice age very, very rapidly, and then to reverse that effect. You know, we're on the cusp of some major, major changes here in terms of technology, and we better come to grips with the societal and ethical issues involved here and oversight. As Rand Paul said, you know, the age-old question, who watches the watchers? You have to have police to protect people, right? The founder said, because we're not angels, we need to have government. But because men are not angels, you can't trust these people in government. You have to watch them. That has been the ancient issue, that tension between these two things. How do we monitor our law enforcement, our FBI, our CIA, our NSA? Yes, there is a legitimate function for these people at some level, but they metastasize into powerful, you know, power corrupts. And as these people get more and more powerful, as they take on godlike omnipotence, godlike omniscience, godlike omnipresence in our lives, then how do we control these different organizations? You know, well, they've got Governor Cuomo has just unveiled facial scanning at the New York toll plazas. Now, one of the things I talk about all the time is how transportation is such an underrated freedom in this country. It was something at the middle of the 20th century that was a very freeing thing. It freed us from having to live in the oppression of cities, which now the United Nations wants to get us back concentrated into the cities. They want to get everybody off of the rural areas, even off of the suburbs. They want to focus you and control you into mega cities, smart cities. Well, you know what? If you're smart, you don't want anything to do with that. And we better come up with a smart way to control this agenda from the United Nations, because they're pushing it very hard. And if we don't do something about this, we're not only not going to have transportation, but our every movement will be a choke point of tracking and of taxing, as I've said. I mean, here it is right here, a toll plaza. That is a tax. What are they doing? They are tracking your movement, even by your ear. I mean, they can identify you by your ear as you're going through this toll booth. Now, it's almost funny how obsessive these people are about control. But folks, you have to look at how they're going to use it. You have to look at how quickly this is coming upon us. And you have to look at the fact that most Americans are not even concerned about the consequences of this kind of technology. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. We're going to talk about how Holly Weird has gone to Holly Wicked. How we've gone from Me Too to who cares if we rape kids and babies. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
He the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Monday, July 23rd, 2018. I'm David Knight. Of course, we've had a lot of news about an attack in Toronto, perhaps a terrorist attack. We'll be covering that as it develops. Also, we've had some troubling war drums being sounded over Iran back and forth. And people reporting from inside Washington, the Pentagon, saying this is sounding an awful lot like the buildup to Iraq that we're now seeing in Iran. Began over the weekend with some statements by the Ayatollahs or whatever in charge there, saying you better not try to stop oil. If you stop oil coming out of Iran, we will shut oil down for everybody. Because right there at the Strait of Hormuz is a very interesting choke point for shipping oil out of the Gulf. So President Trump responded angrily to that, screaming in all uppercase, a very long tweet about not threatening the United States. So as we're looking at that escalating there, we're also going to take a look at what happened over the weekend with some revelations from the FISA documentation that came out on Saturday. Things that verify what we've been saying all along, quite frankly. And yet you still have people like Adam Schiff saying, well, yeah, we used the dossier as a basis for this thing, but if we had had the Helsinki meeting, that would have been in there too. I'm sure it would have been. It's absolutely a fantasy as well that this has anything to do with Russian collusion. We've even had Angela Merkel, the German leader, say that it's a good thing to talk to the other side. Yes, it is. This has always been done by all presidents, Republican and Democrat, since Harry Truman. But now they will weaponize anything. They'll turn everything into some kind of a Russian conspiracy theory. So we're going to take a look at some of the back and forth with that. That's quite interesting, the comments that were made on it. We'll also take a look at what's going on in Hollywood. But the bigger picture that I think nobody else has talked about in terms of where all of these jokes about pedophilia and raping children and so forth, the sick obsessions of Hollywood. Hollywood is a very sick place. If you haven't noticed, but we're going from just being weird to wicked. And this is a transition stage. If you haven't noticed, when they have their social causes and so forth, they begin by making jokes. And then they move to the next stage, which is we will make them sympathetic characters, these pedophiles. See, they have feelings too. And so we have to be sensitive to their feelings. They have already started this. You know, some of them struggle with attraction to children, but they haven't acted on it. So we can cut them some slack and so forth. And then eventually we can say, well, you know, okay, they gave in, they acted on it. We're all weak creatures. It's all okay. It's no problem. And I'm going to tell you where this is all headed. All this nonsense about babies and so forth. You know, you want to say that your kids in kindergarten can make determination about what gender they are, they can then consent to sex. This is where this is headed. And this is the sick agenda of Hollywood. And guess who jumped in on it defending it? Glenn Beck. Unbelievable. I shouldn't say unbelievable. This guy has, whether it's teddy bears for MS-13 child traffickers at the border, or whether it is jumping in and stabbing the Bundy protesters in the back and trying to label them as sovereign citizens to appease Harry Reid. Glenn Beck has always been the fifth column in the conservative libertarian movement. And he's the fifth column when it comes to any kind of semblance of morality or ethics as well. We'll get into all of that, but I want to start with some medical issues, some things that are very, very concerning. On the surface, all this technology can be used for good, of course, can't it? Here's a very interesting article that came out over the weekend. Genetic researchers reverse wrinkles, gray hair, and balding. I could use some of this stuff. I need this severely. I want it now. Okay, but they introduced a specific gene mutation on a test mouse. Within 4 years, they took young mice, and they turned them old within 4 months. And what they did was they turned on a mutation And then once they, and it caused them to have wrinkled skin, visible hair loss. They started getting joint pain and all these other things. Well, they then reversed it, turned off the mutation. And within 2 months, they reverted back to normal. And so I looked at this and I thought, okay, well, this is with normal, median age mice who are not old. Are they, if it was a mouse that was old or human that was old, okay, because this is where this is going. They want to be able to sell this stuff to you. So how are they going to market this stuff? First of all, I can imagine them breaking this down a little bit farther before they really want to market it, because I would imagine that they would want to have separate drugs for wrinkles, gray hair, and balding. You know, these items are sold separately. You hear that all the time. That's the way they market this stuff, right? But then the other part of this is that if the mouse or the human is really old, is this something that you continuously have to take? Oh, that would be very profitable for them, wouldn't it? Now, this was the vector for which they put this mutation in was done piggybacked on an antibiotic. So they can use drugs, they can use vaccines to do all kinds of strange things to our bodies, can't they? They can make us old. They can make us young. They can make us infertile. They can do anything they want to us. Of course, they can spread a pandemic. They could spread something called Disease X. You never know what they're going to do next to you. This is the power that these people have. Now, they, you know, power for good or for evil. But I find it very concerning that there is so much power to be had in this and that there is no oversight. You know, that's the whole reason that Michael Crichton wrote Jurassic Park. Yes, it was very entertaining, and it continues to be a very entertaining franchise. I really enjoy it. But he was very upfront and deliberate about it in the foreword, talking about how rapidly things were changing and how there was neither the will nor the understanding to do any oversight of genetic modification. And that there was not only a massive profit incentive, but also something of an arms race in this, that is fueling this headlong rush into it without any kind of controls or any kind of ethical consideration. And so when we look at this, we look at this story of being able to age mice and then euthan them, I guess we could say, right? That's what happened with Merlin. He euthaned himself or something. He wasn't euthanized, but of course they could do that as well. But when we look at what's happened in China over the weekend, censors, government censors have jumped into action as China's latest vaccine scandal ignites, reports Yahoo. Isn't it nice that we don't have vaccine scandals here in the United States? The only vaccine scandals we have are people who are concerned about their safety and their efficacy. Oh, that's a scandal. But we never have ever had any kind of vaccine health issues, have we? Or so you think. So you just don't know. Because going back to 1986, they had so many people suing the vaccine companies for problems that they were going to go out of business. So they created an immunity for the vaccine companies, not for you. You won't get that immunity, that blanket immunity with their vaccines. No, but they got legal immunity. In 1986, Reagan was told, if you don't give them immunity from people suing them for adverse effects from the vaccines, they will go out of business. So we won't have any vaccines at all. Oh, we can't have that happen. So they essentially created what we call a vaccine court. It's not exactly secret, but they keep it pretty well hidden. And you may not know about how many people have gotten compensation there because they don't talk about that either. They keep a lid on that. See, the media here doesn't have to have the government come in and clamp a censorship order on them. They do it willingly. And then they talk about anybody who has any concern about vaccine safety. Oh, they're crazy tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. Nobody should have any concern about any kinds of drugs. I'm going to take a look twice at my antibiotics. You know, I'm really only about 25. You wouldn't know it to look at me, but maybe it's those antibiotics I just took. All right, we're going to talk about vaccines a little bit more when we come back. And we're going to talk about surveillance. Stay with us. You know, one of my favorite movies is Brazil by Terry Gilling. Kind of a bizarre take on 1984 Orwellianism, and it's kind of halfway funny and halfway really sick. And the problem is that was done in the mid-80s. And as time goes by, the things that he did as over-the-top jokes become implemented in real life on a regular basis. Here's a report from Santa Barbara. This was picked up by Reason, also Free Thought Project, both talked about this. The fact that they have made a new law, a straw prohibition law. Plastic straw prohibition. That just as I thought there was maybe a little bit of reason dawning on people as they said, you know what, we're not going to let you prohibit marijuana for medical use or whatever. You don't have the authority, and it's a bad idea. Now we've got straw prohibition. I mean, are we going to have mandatory minimum jail sentences for people that have plastic straws? Are we going to have SWAT teams kicking in the doors of restaurant kitchens looking for plastic straws? I mean, this is the insanity of this country, especially California, where the motto should be, there ought to be a law. It doesn't just fill in the blank. You know, welcome to the state of California. Put it on the bottom of the license plate there. There ought to be a law. It's absolutely amazing. And so what they're doing is, and it's got some pretty stiff fines on this. They have banned even compostable straws. So only drinking tubes that are made from non-plastic material, paper, metal, or bamboo. And as part of the straw prohibition, they have both an administrative infraction carrying a $100 fine, reports Reason Magazine, and a misdemeanor. And then they also have a maximum fine of $1,000 and up to 6 months in jail. I mean, is that like if you got a big straw or you're using two straws, you get the book thrown at you? Mandatory minimum. What if it's a bendy straw? Are there extra penalties for that? And yet, this is what they're obsessing over. And I'm not going to go into it again. This is all back to the pageant called Earth Day, where this year they decided they would try to talk about pollution. And so they made the poster child for Earth Day this year, the floating masses of plastic sea waste. That if you understand where they're coming from, it's reported at the time that they're coming from some Asian countries. It's some fishing waste. It is also five Asian companies that Asian countries that dump their stuff at sea rather than incinerate it, which is the proper way to use it. And you can also recover energy from that, and you can do it cleanly. No, they don't do that. And instead, this pollution becomes a poster child to address a problem that isn't a problem here in America. And then it just surfaced last week that this panic about 500,000 plastic straws a day being thrown away here in America was an invention of a 9-year-old child, and he just made the story up. But all the environmentalist groups are still lauding him for this. I mean, he's like the David Hogg of straw prohibition. You know, come and sip it. And it's gone from... you know, this poster child to the insanity. It's been reported on again by Reason of Starbucks jumping in, always wanting to be at the forefront of political correctness and insanity, replacing their straws with plastic sippy cup lids that actually contain more plastic. Now you've got straw prohibition and heavy fines in Santa Barbara, California. Where else? But they're not worried about vaccines. Of course, if you're worried at all, if you're worried about plastic straws, then you are a good person. Congratulations, and you're going to get awards. They're going to celebrate you in Hollywood. But if you are concerned about vaccines, Hollywood will censor you from the film festivals and so forth, as they did Vaxxed. I've had Del Bigtree, the producer of Vaxxed, here. They threw him out. They didn't want any free speech. They didn't want to hear what he had to show them, his research. And so now we have the story that came out yesterday in China. Chinese censors on Sunday deleted articles and postings about the vaccine industry as an online outcry over the country's latest vaccine scandal intensified, reports AFP. Now, note that this is the latest vaccine scandal in China, not the first, not the only. And, of course, we don't have vaccine scandals here except when somebody talks about the fact that, hey, did you realize that there are safety issues with vaccines just like there are with everything else? Like there are with drugs? Like there are with any manufactured item? You have safety concerns? Who is monitoring this? Who is watching this? Can you do anything about it? No, you can't sue the vaccine companies, as I said in the last segment. All right, that was a 1986 law that granted them legal immunity. They have a vaccine court, essentially. You have a special master that you can go and beg for some compensation when you've been injured by a vaccine, if you know about it. Most people don't know about this. They keep it a secret in the mainstream media. They want to pretend that this kind of thing never happens in America. Now, they have a Chinese Food and Drug Administration, the CFDA. They also have a Center for Disease Control and Prevention there. Same parallel structure. I don't know if they've got a special vaccine court, but they do have a media that does exactly as they're told, just like our mainstream media. It's a little bit more direct there. Here they do it kind of behind closed doors. Regulators said last week that they halted production of a rabies vaccine at a large pharmaceutical company in the Northeast after finding fabricated records and other problems during an inspection. Now, that would never happen here, right? Of course it wouldn't, because we don't have a government that looks at fabricated records during inspections. They don't care. See, not only can you not sue these people, but as Del Bigtree and Robert Kennedy Jr. Discovered in a lawsuit, Del Bigtree came on, I think it was just last week, within the last week and a half. They were able to get the government to finally admit they had to do a FOIA request and they had to sue them for the FOIA records. They got them to admit that since 1986, HHS, which was tasked with monitoring vaccine safety, doing tests, creating programs that were going to make vaccines safer and more effective, they said, we'd like to see what you've done in the last 31 years. Guess what? They had done nothing, nothing at all. They had absolutely no records of any monitoring or any testing or any safety programs for vaccination. So not only did they stop you being able to sue them, they stopped all monitoring of this stuff as well. And they even admitted that their system, their VAERS system for vaccines, that they monitor this, they said, well, it only captures 1% of the vaccine injuries. We had 56,000 vaccine injuries in 2016. Did you realize that? That's a pretty big number. 56,000. They're telling us we've got to get rid of our cars because we've got 30,000 people that are killed every year on highways and so forth. You got 56,000 people injured with vaccines. But they don't want to talk about that. But then it gets even worse because they said that only captures, people who are capturing it said that's only 1% of the injuries. So talk about 5.6 million people injured in 2016 alone. Maybe they need the Chinese censorship of reporting vaccine injuries. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I've got one more thing to say about this concern in China about their latest vaccine scandal, which, of course, we don't have here in America because all of our vaccines are perfectly safe. And you can't sue the vaccine company. So there, they're not safe. As I said, they admit they've had 56,000 vaccine injuries in 2016 and that they only capture 1% of the vaccine injuries. That means 5.6 million vaccine injuries estimated by our own government. And you won't be able to sue them like you would any other manufacturer or any drug company that makes any drug. No, vaccines are a special case. You can't sue them. You can try to go before the vaccine court, but that's it. They keep that secret. So what's happening in China? Well, as anxiety grew over the weekend, an essay alleging corruption and murky practices in the vaccine industry spread across social media in China. This is being reported by AFP. Now, the company said that it had halted production of another vaccine for diphtheria, because this is about a rabies vaccine, and not too many people are taking the rabies vaccine. I don't know, maybe it's different in China, but that's a fairly rare occurrence. However, when you look at DPT, or DTP rather, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, that was also involved in scandals with this company. Regulators found last year that it was substandard, had become the focus of public attention. But, of course, if you were here in America, you wouldn't be able to sue them for any of this stuff, right? They don't have any legal liability. They have immunity, even though their vaccines don't work, even though their vaccines are potentially dangerous. If you are injured by them, you have no recourse here in America. And then, of course, their government says, in Beijing, they say, Beijing does not have any of these two vaccines in question, so you can rest easy. Don't worry about it. Regulators in Guangdong and Sichuan also said the same thing. There's only one province where they admitted that they had the problem. Now, this is not the only province in which these vaccines are being sold, folks. It's the only province where they've got any honesty and transparency. The rest of these people are being lied to. They acknowledged that they had 250,000 doses of the problematic vaccine that had been sold. And back in 2016, the same province had admitted that there had been improper storage, transportation, sales of tens of millions of dollars worth of vaccines, many of them expired. The rest of them are lying to you, just like our government lies to you. And, you know, we look at this and we look at the insanity, the cognitive dissonance about the danger of plastic straws to the planet, and yet completely falling in line and getting angry if you point out that, you know, vaccines are like drugs and they can have manufacturing issues. They can have problems with contaminants that get into them that are put there deliberately to try to make your immune system respond to it. They call those adjuvants. They deliberately put things in there, like formaldehyde and aluminum, to try to make your immune system react to it and create antibodies because they don't work too well. And then those things that they add create their own unique problems. But if you say anything about that, they get really angry, just like they get really angry if you use a plastic straw. Kind of reminds me of the days that H.L. Mencken was talking about. FDR becomes president, right? It's like, I'm going to get rid of this alcohol prohibition. This has got to go. But then he prohibits gold. And so H.L. Mencken says, well, you know, a year ago, if I had a gold coin in my pocket and a flask of alcohol, the gold coin was legal and the alcohol was illegal. Now, a year later, the gold is illegal and the alcohol is legal. And that's kind of where we are today. As they're starting to roll back the prohibitions on medical marijuana and other things, and here's hemp. Now, hemp doesn't have any effect at all on you. It's not, it has no psychological effects. It is not psychoactive. You can make CBD oil out of it. You can make ropes out of it. You can make textiles out of it. You can do all kinds of things with it. But the federal government, as Free Thought Project points out, has spent years classifying hemp as a dangerous drug because it derives from the cannabis plant, even though it's not a drug at all. And it's not psychoactive. Nevertheless, because it is from the cannabis plant, we must prohibit it. Going back to 1937, they made it, it was legally grown, but then they passed the Marijuana Tax Act, which didn't criminalize it, but it essentially taxed it in a way so that you couldn't possess or grow it. The law was eventually declared unconstitutional in 1969. Why? Because the government doesn't have the power to do that under the 10th Amendment. And then they passed another unconstitutional law, the Controlled Substances Act, that set regulations for cannabis and for industrial hemp. So they're two different things. Two different things. Now, the market for CBD oil hit $291 million in 2017, will balloon to $1.65 billion by 2021, a growth of 500% in just 4 years. Instead of bowing down to the federal government, many states across the country have started to fight back. You have farmers in 17 states have obtained state licenses to produce industrial hemp for commercial purposes. You know, you can buy hemp products. You can buy hemp seed to sprinkle on your salad in the grocery stores anywhere here in the United States. You can get it on Amazon. You can get CBD oil at retail anywhere. But we have blocked people here in America from growing and selling that stuff. It is absolute insanity. And at the same time, we're freaking out as that is starting to be rolled back. We have absolutely no concern about vaccines, and we're totally freaking out about plastic straws. What is going on with this country? It's absolutely insane. You got Mitch McConnell, of course, in Kentucky, where they could grow a lot of this stuff. He and Rand Paul have been pushing on this hemp licensing. He still thinks that the psychoactive varieties of cannabis should be prohibited. But he is saying, hey, you know, we got to take off the federal barriers for hemp. Even Mitch McConnell knows that there's a difference between hemp and marijuana. Can we even acknowledge that? It's absolutely amazing. But when we look at what is in our vaccines, and of course we don't want to look at that. We don't want to read the inserts. We don't want to pay attention to what they did when they took away our ability to sue them. Why would they have to do that? Why, when a product is so dangerous that you won't have that product unless you prohibit people from suing you for producing that product, why would we give them legal immunity? We should have said, clean up your act or stop making it. That's the solution. But that's not the way things happen in Washington. You give the right amount of money to the right people and you get legal immunity. And so as we see, the U.S. birth rate has been cut in half since the 1950s. And let's not even talk about the autism rate or the cancer rate or the rest of this stuff. See, there's a real price to pay for ignorance, isn't there? There's a real price to pay for saying, you people are a bunch of ignorant conspiracy theorists. That's some former employees of mine when my wife and I owned some chain stores. And I had had just about enough. You know, they want to disagree with what I have to say. They want to disagree with information about vaccines, about the police state, about the lies of the Democrat Party. That's fine. That's fine. I can tolerate ignorance. What I cannot tolerate is people calling for censorship. And so when I had some of these former friends say that if Facebook doesn't censor InfoWars, I'm getting off of Facebook. I said, well, fine. Why don't you do that? You have absolutely no idea how Facebook is weaponizing the information for you lemmings. The Quislings at Facebook are using you lemmings, and you have absolutely no idea because you are so profoundly ignorant and so bigoted in your information and in your information sources. You don't want to think for yourself. The penalty that you have is expressed in the multiplying health problems that we have in this country, at the very least, not considering the death of our liberty and our Bill of Rights and our Constitution. When you beg for censorship of organizations, I don't even beg for censorship for CNN. I want them out there. I think they're a great poster child. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. The latest update on the Toronto shooting. Earlier this morning, it was one dead, 13 injured. Now they have changed that to two dead, 12 injured. One of those injured has died. A girl around 8 years old is also in critical condition. They have only identified the gunman as a 29-year-old man, and there is no information yet on motive. The police have said that they would not rule out terrorism. They're waiting to find out what happens with this. They had some cell phone footage that showed a guy walking with a black hoodie down the street and then pulling out the gun and firing. So there's no information yet as to motive there in Toronto. Again, at the moment, it is two dead and 12 injured. One of those injured is a young child that is in critical condition, an 8-year-old girl. We're going to talk about Hollywood here in just a moment before we get to FISA, because you know what? I think that what is happening in Hollywood has a more direct bearing on us right now than what's going on with this Trump coup in Washington. And certainly Trump knows about it. These people have power. They can protect themselves. He can declassify this stuff. He is far more capable of protecting himself than the children that are the people who are being attacked. And not just physically attacked. Their minds are being attacked by the filth coming out of this cesspool we call Hollywood. And I want to talk about this in just one moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. We have our new product, which we introduced, I think it was last week, Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel, 25% off. Of course, silver is very effective at fighting virus and bacteria. That's why having it as a gel that you can use topically, it's not going to drip or run off, is very effective for treating minor cuts, burns, scrapes, other things like that. It's silver is still used widely in hospitals for burn patients. It is an ancient remedy against bacteria and viruses, and it is still being used. And you can get your Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel 25% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have some other sales that are included. Brain Force, 50% off. We have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, 40% off. And we have our Defeat the Democrat Censorship Sale. We have added 50% off for Vitamin Mineral Fusion, 50% off for BioTrue Selenium. There's no question that selenium is very important for your health. The question is, are you going to have a good source of it? This is, we call it BioTrue because it is organic selenium. And you can get that again, 50% off. And finally, Alpha Power, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Take a look at the products that we have as part of our sale. We really do appreciate your support. That's what I said, funds this program. All right, let's talk about Hollywood. Or as we've referred to it in the past, Hollyweird. It's gone from Hollyweird to Hollywicked, quite frankly. And it's happened very, very quickly and very openly, too. Think about how Hollywood has reacted, as many people pointed out, with Roseanne Barr versus these tweets, multiple tweets, where they, we were just joking about it. Well, you know, when I look at Valerie Jarrett, I can understand that Roseanne Barr didn't know that she was black. She doesn't look black. I didn't know it until I did research. I knew it before Roseanne knew it, but I didn't know that she was black. But she really does look like somebody from the Planet of the Apes. I'm sorry. You know, it's a whatever. It isn't because she's black. It's because she doesn't look black. The people in Planet of the Apes, they were supposed to look, you know, half human and half something else. Anyway. But it is kind of low to attack people on their appearances. But that's a form of humor, whether you like it or not. I don't think she should have been taken off of the air because of that, because of an ad hominem attack. But you want to make jokes about molesting children? You want to post stuff that links child pornography, and you think that's okay? It's just a joke? And these people have been doing this a long time. And I understand why Disney did this so quickly, why they cut the cord on this guy so quickly. We've had Disney artists that have been caught doing subliminal messages. I know about this. I had a video store back in the 1980s and on. And they had a lot of stuff that they stuck in there that was subliminal or that was a wink and a nod to the parents and so forth. And they've been doing this kind of stuff for a while. And they caught some criticism for it. They had to redo the cover for The Little Mermaid because what some graphic artist had snuck in there as a joke. And so this has been something that has been there for quite some time. They had to cut the cord to this guy pretty quickly. But let's just start at another place. Let's start with the transgender axe attacker in Australia. This guy says, this is a man. He says, I identify as a woman. And even though I killed people, attacked people, I don't know if he killed people or he attacked people. With an axe. He attacked people. I don't know if they died or not. At a 7-Eleven. He said it was his body, but it wasn't him. And he had voices in, you know, telling him. So it's kind of like, you know, I didn't do it, she did it. Or she didn't do it, he did it. You know, he said, she said. Or he said, she did it. Or whatever. You know, this is insanity, folks. There used to be a time when television joked about the transgender issue. It was MASH. You had Corporal Klinger. And it was a running joke. Everybody knew that he was a transgender, but he was trying to do it as an alibi. He wanted people to think that he really believed that so he could plead that he was insane and get out of the military. Section 8. And now that started out as a joke, and now we have it all over the products of Hollywood, don't we? Being pushed at us. He said he was bodily present at the axe attack, but his mind was somewhere else. And this is the whole point. Biology and genitalia are objective. It's biological, it's objective, it's binary. And when you start saying, it's all in my mind, it is no different than this guy saying, I didn't kill them, the woman in my body did. I mean, this is, it goes, this is full psycho, folks. I wonder if he's sitting there, he goes, I'm not even going to hurt that little fly. See, they'll show them how harmless I am. But then you got, every day we're seeing something else coming out with some superhero selling their new insanity as normality and taking the mask off of gender fluidity and these other issues. Now we got Supergirl is going to have a transgender rights activist as a trans superhero, following the fact that we just had a lesbian Batwoman is now going to be pushed at us. And of course, the actress that does Supergirl, as Breitbart points out, went on Stephen Colbert and was very proud of the fact that this is all about feminism because she has the same powers as Superman does. Note to self, this is not the real world, okay? This is some fantasy construct that you've done where you guys dress up, you got secret identities, multiple identities, and everything. It's a perfect opportunity to have a transgender superhero here. And as they point out, Supergirl on CW has been a bastion of liberal activism. Multiple gay characters, attacks on conservatives, slams on President Trump, hits on Fox News, and so forth. This is the way these people roll. And so in that kind of environment, one tweet from Roseanne is inexcusable. She may have the most popular show on television, but she is banned. But if James Gunn puts out multiple pedophile tweets, it's just a joke. And he's excused by various people, right? Dave Bautista is one of the characters in the latest Marvel series that they've done. He plays Drax on Guardians of the Galaxy. He says, he's loving, he's caring, he's good-natured. I heard the same stuff about Roman Polanski from Harvey Weinstein a decade ago and from many, many people in Hollywood. Remember, Harvey Weinstein said, it's over. It's done. He's paid for his crimes and he's true to his art. They don't care in Hollywood, quite frankly. They really don't care. And when you go back and you look at the stuff where they're joking about this, I can't even read these things. On the air. That's how disgusting they are. Would it be okay if they were to say these same types of disgusting things about touching women or raping women? No, but it's okay when you say it about children, isn't it? But not when you say it about women. Isn't that interesting? Not if you say it about gays or homosexuals. It's not allowed. But if you say it about our children, that's fine. It's just a joke. Lighten up, you heavy conservatives. There's some of the stuff there. You can read it for yourself. That's the sickness of these people. Folks, they are coming for your kids. And I'm going to tell you how and why this works. You know, I got pedophiles. When we come back, I'll talk about it. Pedophiles saying they want to be part of the LGBTQ community.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, Hollywood has protected women now to the extent that we can't even have beauty contests, right? Yet you look at the perverted stuff coming out of these protected, preferred Hollywood people, like James Gunn. You look at the perverted stuff that he's got there. And this is about 20 different tweets that they've got, every one of them. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable what he's saying. And people are saying, give him a pass. It's just these humorless conservatives who want to take this guy out. I don't know how you can excuse this, But, of course, we do have Glenn Beck excusing it. that's Glenn Beck. And as Breitbart points out, he's got bigger problems than his old tweets. As they point out, his unbelievably sleazy, disturbing history of fantasizing about and belittling child rape has been spun into an unjust firing because the mean old conservatives and the white supremacists out there have dug up a bunch of old and merely offensive tweets that merely contained tasteless jokes. Well, this guy, as of just the end of March, was calling for Laura Ingraham's career to be ended because she criticized David Hogg, called him a whiner. He said, I hope Hulu stops advertising on the Laura Ingraham show so I can watch it. Online bullying and shaming of teenagers should not be supported by Hulu. Let them know. Well, what does it mean then when you joke about raping babies? Is that okay? That's okay then? And then he also put up a video. 100 pubescent girls touch themselves. You can find that now on the Wayback Machine. Yeah, we're not even going to show these tweets because they're too vulgar for us to put up on the broadcast. They'll probably get shut down by YouTube because we're conservative. But he can tweet this stuff out, and it's not only okay, and is firing unjustified. But his tweets will be okay with that. Anyway, he's taken it down. It was his own personal website that he put that on. It's been taken down now, but you can find it on the Wayback Machine that he had that posted. And where did he get it from? He got it from a guy called Houston Huddleston. He said, Houston Huddleston posted this video on my Facebook page with a note, I thought you'd appreciate this. And my response was, appreciate it. And then he makes another vulgar reference. Well, it turns out there is a Houston Huddleston, not a very common name, maybe a coincidence, that appears to be the same Houston Huddleston who later pled guilty to possessing child pornography and is now a registered sex offender. Maybe it's the different one. Wouldn't you like to know? But he's kind of covered his tracks on that. And then, of course, there's Michael Ian Black, another person in Hollywood who is protected from all this stuff because it really doesn't matter. You know, just last week, and I didn't get to it, we had Prince Charles claiming he didn't know that a bishop that he had been very close friends with for over 20 years was a pedophile. He's told a public inquiry that he was unaware that a bishop he was friends with for over two decades was a pedophile. He didn't understand the clergyman's caution for gross indecency included an admission of guilt. Okay, so let's think about this. We just had the World Cup. Those of you who watch it, as it's called football elsewhere, we call it soccer here. You know, of course, the English created this. You foul somebody, they give you a yellow card, a caution, right? You do it more than once. I don't know how many times you have to do it because I'm not a soccer fan. You get a red card and you're out of the game. Well, I don't know how many cautions this guy has to get. And I guess for Prince Charles, it only mattered not that he was given a caution. He admitted that he was guilty. But Prince Charles said, well, gee, I didn't know that. I only thought he had been cautioned for doing it. Well, why would they caution him if there wasn't something to it? He had a close friendship with this guy. And guess what his name is? Peter Ball. You can't make this stuff up, folks. We got Wiener and his laptop. We got Peter Ball, the pedophile friend of Prince Charles. I mean, this stuff is just baked in with these guys. He was finally convicted in 2015 of sexually abusing over a dozen victims. Now, this wouldn't be anything like Jimmy Savile, would it? That guy that was also close friends with the royal family for so many decades that they covered up and shut down investigations from Scotland Yard, shut down investigations from the BBC for all those years? We'll be right back.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I've got one more segment I want to spend on this. And then we're going to be joined by Mark Hare. I had him on about nearly 2 weeks ago. We talked about a film series that he's putting together about LaVoie Finicum that explains what happened there. He runs the Center for Self-Governance, and I wanted to talk to him about that organization and what they're doing to help start grassroots organizations to take back our power from the transnational power structures to do it at a local level. It's all about education. Things like this film that he's put together. So he's going to be joining us and we'll talk about some things that you can do from a positive standpoint. But I want to finish up with all this pushback that we're getting from Hollywood. It was just a joke, they say. Well, you know, before you can normalize something like pedophilia, you have to be able to talk about it openly. And how do you do that? Well, you begin by making jokes about it. So we can't even show the tweets on here, let alone talk about them, without getting shut down. And so they have to get beyond that barrier. They got to get to the point where we can talk about that. We can say it openly because it's a joke or because we're reporting it or whatever. They get this out there. Now we all start talking about it. We start reading the tweets and so forth. And now it's no longer the unspeakable thing of raping and sexualizing children and babies. No, no, no. We can now joke about that. It's not unspeakable anymore. That's the first step. And then there are other progressive steps as part of this. And the people who are the most powerful in politics, in our entertainment and media, you don't realize. You think it's all just a joke. You think it's all just fantasy. These people are setting the narrative. They are speaking directly into your children's lives. They're doing things to them subliminally. They've been doing it for years at Disney, as I pointed out, and other places. And they're not being so subliminal about it anymore. When you look at what Disney does, as they've taken over the franchises of Star Wars, of Marvel and so forth, they are now rapidly moving them into this LGBTQ and pedophile world. And that's where this is all happening. I'm going to get into that in just a moment. But before I leave Prince Charles, that I was talking about at the top of the hour, this is a guy who back in 1993 had to resign. He was a bishop. He had to resign his ministry. There was a police investigation into his abuse of boys and young men. He pled guilty. He accepted a caution. Then Prince Charles was his buddy for over 20 years until he got caught again in 2015 for dozens of cases of this. And he said, I didn't know. I just thought he got a caution. You didn't suspect that there was something to it because he's no longer a bishop? You didn't care, did you? Or maybe there was more to it. Ball's connections, reports RT, to influential establishment figures and questions of whether they interfered with the criminal justice process will be put under the microscope at the inquiry that starts this week. We've already seen this happen with the royal family, with Jimmy Savile. This guy who was embraced by the royal family, who was covered by the BBC, who had a lifetime of being a pedophile, who was never outed until after he died. And then when you had individuals periodically throughout his lifetime, investigations were started at Scotland Yard and then they were shut down by the people higher up. You had people at the BBC, after he died, did an investigation and a documentary into his life. They were shut down by people higher up at the BBC. All the time, he was hand in glove with the royal family. And so when we look at all this joking about child rape and baby rape and so forth, and we got parents, as the story broke last week, we're going to let our kids decide what their genre is. We're going to call them babies. We're not going to say it's a boy or a girl. We're going to use gender-neutral pronouns. All this gender fluidity stuff, folks, this is the handmaid to pedophilia. Because if you can say that the kids know and can choose what their gender is, and they can make decisions and consent about sex. This is the way that they normalize it. And as Daily Caller pointed out last week, pedophiles believe they should be a part of the LGBT community. Now, we've already got the LGBT people are fighting each other. The T's are fighting the L's. The T's who say that, you know, they're men, and they say, well, I identify as a woman, and so I am a woman. And the lesbians are saying, no, you're not. We get special treatment or whatever because we're women. But the lesbians are having a problem with that. The lesbians are starting to sound sane in terms of your gender is biological. It is objective. It is binary. It's not in your mind. You know, we just had a Christian doctor who was fired after 23 years in the UK because he refused to play that game. He said, gender is determined biologically and genetically. And when somebody comes in here and they have male XY chromosomes and male genitalia, I cannot, as a doctor, call them a woman. And the treatment is different as well. in many cases. They're going to present different issues for different treatment. So they're calling and forcing the doctors to try to say 2 + 2 = 5. That is the ultimate means of control and submission to people. Oh, you're going to say the 2 + 2 = 5 is to say this person is clearly one sex and you're going to call them the other. And you're going to do it or we're going to destroy your life. So this guy, sorry, it wasn't 23 years, 26 years. And now we've got the pedophiles, you know, the transgenders are fighting the lesbians. Lesbians say, well, don't group us in with these people then. You know, we want to get the L out of here. But then you've got the pedophiles saying that they should be part of the LGBT community. So we're going to add a P at the end. Pedophiles are rebranding themselves as MAPS. And here's how it goes. See, first, you joke about it so you can talk about it. We get people comfortable with hearing the terminology. Then we do some more stuff from Hollywood where we show them as minor attracted persons, MAPS. Now, they're not acting on that attraction, but they're just attracted to babies sexually. But that's, you know, but they're virtuous because they're not doing anything about it. They're struggling with that. And so the next step is from making a joke about it, we show this as a compassionate struggle. And then, of course, the next step is to say, and also the kids can choose their gender. So, you know, this is fine. They can now consent to this. These people are struggling with it. So, well, let's just get over these ancient Christian prohibitions. Well, it's not just Christian prohibitions. Every society has had prohibition against this. According to the Urban Dictionary, the blanket term MAP, minor attracted persons, includes infantophiles, pedophiles, hebephiles, that means people like pubescent children, and those who like post-pubescent children. Some MAPs also refer to themselves as no-MAPs or non-offending minor attracted persons. So if you're a no-MAP, that's okay. And we can do stories about that. We can make your heart bleed for these people and what they struggle with. The pedophiles are seeking to be part of the LGBT plus community, and they want to make a pride flag for the Gay Pride Month. They want to pull up people's heartstrings, and they'll do it through the movies, folks. They'll do it through these sickos, these perverts, these wicked people in Hollywood, pulling at your heartstrings, claiming that they are misunderstood, that they are marginalized, that they are discriminated against, that they're the victims of religious bigotry. And here's how it goes. One of them, the Prevention Project, that is aimed at helping children, they say, posts a quote like this: everybody needs support. They said John was suicidal. He had been bullied by trolls on social media for most of his life for being different. The bullies were primarily people who claimed based on their religious beliefs. See, they're the problem. It's those religious bigots, those bullies, those tyrants. They based on their religious beliefs, they claimed that John was going to hell and he deserved to die. Once he shared his attraction to children, his therapist told him, I don't treat sex offenders. See, he's a victim. It's all just a joke. Let him get away with it. Glenn Beck says, you know, we all make mistakes in defending James Gunn. He says, I will stand for you. We all make mistakes. We must come together as each of us grow and change. What is Beck going to change into? Does he identify as a woman or what? I mean, he's been handing out teddy bears to kids at the border. That supposedly these 8-year-olds that were there that were making the border, that was a lie. But, you know, maybe there were some 8-year-olds that he could give teddy bears to.
Of people in trouble, reflections of my life. Oh, how they fill my eyes.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Mark Hare. I talked to him about 2 weeks ago. We got an update from him about a documentary series that he's begun about LaVoie Finicum. To try to get people to understand what the real issues are here. And he's got an update on what's going on, the trial of the FBI agent who took a shot at the car as it was driving down the road. They weren't harming anybody and denied that he had shot that car. That took him some time to take a look at it. And they said, well, this is a different caliber. We know it's the FBI. They were trying to obstruct justice. And so now that trial has begun. So I want to get an update about that. But I also want to talk about his organization, Center for Self-Governance. That was what we didn't have time to talk about the last time we were here. We have to start coming up with tactics to take back power at the local level, folks. And we can do it, even against the transnational power structures. And I think what Mark Hare is putting together is the type of thing that we need to see happen. Of course, we've seen elements of this with the John Birch Society over the years. They have always pushed the idea of local law enforcement and so forth. A good example of this is what happened to Lavoie Finicum, to the Hammonds, to the Bundys, to other people. It's not just those three. Many different examples of that. So I want to talk to him about that as well. And of course, you can find him, the centerforselfgovernance.com. You can also find them on Twitter at TNSelfGov. TNSelfGov is the way to remember that at Twitter. All right, so joining us now is Mark Hare. Thank you for joining us, Mark.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having us on.
Give us a little bit of an update as to what's going on today in the trial for the FBI agent who took a unprovoked shot at these people who shot first and shot at the car that Lavoie Finicum was driving in and then lied and obstructed justice with that. That's an FBI agent that now the trial has begun today. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the trial starts today for Agent Astorita. He is last week the judge threw out two of the five counts against him, and so he'll be facing three counts. They expect the trial to last for 4 weeks. Jeanette Finicum, the widow of Lavoie Finicum, and her family are out there for the length of the trials. And so this is a pretty big week for Jeanette Finicum, as I believe tomorrow she meets with the judge in her wrongful death suit to begin discussing pretrial motions, most likely requests to dismiss her lawsuit. And that should begin tomorrow in Pendleton, Oregon. So there's a lot going on in Oregon this week.
And do you have any information about the charges that were thrown out and the charges that remain?
Yes. So two of the charges deal with obstruction of justice and telling the truth. So in one of the counts, basically, he told a supervisory FBI agent that the supervisory agent couldn't ask him a question. And so the judge said, well, that doesn't constitute not telling the truth. Therefore, we're going to throw that charge out. The other three charges have to do with purposefully lying and then obstructing justice. And so really what it's going to come down to is, does the prosecution have ballistics evidence to prove that it was his gun that fired any of the missing, the two missing shots? And so right now the prosecution is going to have quite a difficult time proving that it was Astorita that actually fired, because at the moment they don't have physical ballistics evidence. So a lot of it is circumstantial at the moment. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out over the next 4 weeks.
Now, what I understood at the time was they found the hole, I think it was in the roof of the truck that was driving. They found a hole, and it was the size that didn't match any of the guns that any of the state or local law enforcement had. And so they knew from that basis that it was the FBI, and I thought they walked it back from that. That's that's the only physical evidence that they have of that, then, is the hole?
So they do have the hole, but what is going to be groundbreaking in this case is that Ryan Bundy has shrapnel from that shot in his shoulder. He has never authorized the removal of that shrapnel from his arm. And so that is going to be, like I said, it's going to be a very interesting 4 weeks to watch how this case plays out. Does Ryan Bundy authorize the removal of that shrapnel as ballistics evidence to prove whether or not that bullet came from a Oregon State Patrol weapon or from an FBI weapon?
Wow. And of course, let's put this in context for everybody. This was an ambush that was set up. They had a roadblock. They said, are we free to go? Are we under arrest? And so forth. And at one point, he drives off. Then they start the chase. They set up a roadblock. And they were on their way peacefully to a meeting that was in another town. It was the sheriff of that county that was one of the hosts of the meeting, where they were going to be talking about land issues and so forth. So they set up this roadblock, this ambush. And as they're driving, somebody shot into the car first, and they have multiple shots. And you can see that if you look at the FBI's video. First, they just released their silent aerial shots. And then once we got the video that was inside the car from a cell phone, and you put those two together, you can see really what is going on. And you can see that they're not being aggressive with anybody. It's the federal government that is shooting at them. And then LaVoy Finicum says, I'm going to get out and draw their fire and so forth. And they kill him. And then after he is shot and dying there in the snow, then they continue to fire tremendous number of rounds at the car, trying to provoke them to shoot. They never did shoot back. It was always the government that was shooting.
Well, and that's part of the fascinating aspects of this case, and that is that they had no reason to feel that they were under threat when they left the Malheur Refuge to go to Grant County for this meeting. However, interviewing Ammon Bundy for the documentary on LaVoy Finicum, he did mention a couple of times in the interview that he felt very uncomfortable that day about how fast they were having to make the decision. So he felt unprepared, so he has some regret related to going there. So when they passed through that very barren stretch of road on their way to Grant County, there's no cell phone signal through this stretch. There's no buildings. There's no lodging. There's a ski resort, like a sledding resort, toward the end of this park. And they noticed that all the vehicles were there. They realized that they had been trapped. And now it's going to come out probably in this case, if not in the wrongful death suit, that they had been planning this roadblock for about 3 days. So like I said, David, this is going to be a very interesting 4 weeks. I think Jeanette Finicum's lawsuit is going to be a very interesting year to 2 year process. So this story is not dead. This story is not going away. And I think at least for our country, it's valuable that this story stays alive so that we all can have the debate amongst ourselves. What is the proper use of force? What is the proper use of law enforcement in relationship to identifying and profiling threats? And that is an entire discussion in itself, something that I refer to as label lynching. But anyway,
we need to understand that this is not a problem that is limited to blacks in the inner cities or to conservatives in rural areas. This is a problem that we all need to come together in urban, rural, black and white and say, this is, you know, you guys deserve this. No, nobody deserves that kind of treatment. The blacks in the urban areas don't deserve it. The whites in the rural areas don't deserve it. And if we don't come together and fight this, then we deserve what we get. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk to Mark Hare about Center for Self-Governance and what they're doing, not only with this, but with other issues, how they're trying to train people. We'll be right back.
Sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Mark Hare, the Center for Self-Governance.com. And I want to talk to him about what we can do to change our government. You know, we can't just say that it's done when we get the right guy in Washington at the very top. Quite frankly, I don't want a top-down pyramid structure with a pharaoh or a king or an emperor god at the top. That is a very dangerous thing. We've seen it with the left. We have seen the left worship Obama. We saw it as a personality cult. And then I was very distressed to see the same thing happening around President Obama when he ran, and even after he got elected. Many people after 8 years of Obama on the left, I remember Harry Belafonte saying, well, you know, he's not the guy that we made him into. We projected our values, our wishes onto him. And that's not the guy that he was. And even if you get a good guy in, that good guy is only going to be there for so long. Benevolent dictators are ultimately replaced with malevolent dictators. The power structure, the pyramid power structure is the problem. We have to take things back at the local level. We have to get active ourselves. We're not going to be carried on a feather bed to a state of liberty, as the founder said. You have to fight for it yourself, and it's a constant fight. And part of that fight is being educated and understanding and creating the tools to win that fight at the lower level. We need to truly make ourselves grassroots. We need to understand that politics is really local. And so that's why I wanted to talk to Mark Hare this segment about his Center for Self-Governance. And before we go back to Mark and before he talks to us about what's there, I want to play for you a little video that they have on their site short video that gives you an overview of the Center for Self-Governance. Here's that video.
The purpose of the Center for Self-Governance is to teach individual citizens how to wield their civic authority.
You can't keep going to your fellow citizens with just energy. You have to go to your fellow citizens with facts.
Who is in control of who?
We're challenging them to think differently about themselves, about their government, and especially about their fellow citizens.
They need to learn their responsibilities in keeping the republic.
They actually have a larger role as a human being within their society to have an impact on the way their community moves forward.
The Center for Self-Governance is an effective tool to controlling elected officials and government.
It's our personal responsibility to control instituted government. If we don't do that, then instituted government will control us.
All right, and that's the centerforselfgovernance.com, and we're talking to the founder and co-founder and president of the Center for Self-Governance, Mark Hare. Mark, talk to us a little bit about the importance of taking control at the local level, because it's very easy. I mean, we've got, no matter how good a person is, we're all fallen, incomplete individuals. We can all go off the rails. We can all make mistakes. There are certain things that we can't get done, and we're all going to be there for a limited amount of time. The real power is in the community, and we have to learn how to wield that power, don't we?
Yes, and this is such an important point, that political power is not something that a voter has or something that you give away to an elected official. Political power is something you have because you exist. There you are, David Knight, myself, Mark Hare, and all of your staff and everyone watching and listening, and of course, everyone who's not paying attention. Each of us has political power merely because we're human beings. And this is the premise that this country was founded on, is that each individual being, human being, is a separate and equal natural person capable of exercising some decisions. Not all of our decisions are great. Not all of our abilities to interpret the consequences are great. And so we use government to confine chaos, obviously. But there's another aspect here, David, that's very important for your listeners to understand, and that is the founders not only built government to confine the chaos of somebody breaking into your home at 3 a.m, they also built a system of government to confine the oppressive human nature of those who control government. We have lots of history to back this up. So that's number one, is we need to realize we, each of us, everyone, babies all the way to older folks, have political power. Number two, government isn't just designed to confine the chaos of the governed. It's also designed in our country to confine the oppressive human nature of those who control government. Without that, there's two things that happen. Balance is unachievable. And number two, the governed eventually become slaves. Human history is the proof of this. And so to deny that is intellectual dishonesty. It's intellectually dishonest to ignore the human nature of the governing in relationship to their natural tendency to oppress the governed. Yes.
And I think that was a thing that was different about America's founding from every other revolution that you look at. Every other revolution, the people who come in and say, we're going to give power back to the people, we're going to take it from this group of people over here, they become very rapidly, they become vicious tyrants. We saw it with the French Revolution, for example. And then even the French Revolution, the Reign of Terror, turns in on the people themselves who started the revolution. I mean, it is this cannibalizing effect of power and control. And only in America, where you had the founders so cognizant of the government going overboard with its power and becoming the oppressor and trying to put in controls there, only in America did you not have that happen for some period of time. But now it has happened. And what do we do about it? That's the key.
That is such a brilliant point, and something that each of your listeners need to consider carefully. One, you do have political power, and where are you located? You're located wherever you go. So if you're there in that locality, there you are, and there is political power. Secondly, you have to realize whether it's the school board or the city council or the county commission, regional government, state government, or federal government, that each of the people who are in control of those levels of government have their human nature that they take into the policy-making equation too. And so it's incumbent upon you as human beings to realize government isn't just there to make your journey through life comfortable. Government is there to confine the natural tendency of chaos, like Antifa rioting in Portland or beating up pro-Trump supporters in Berkeley or, you know, Black Lives Matter stopping traffic in St. Louis. There's also the matter of the governing using policy to manipulate you out of your freedom. And that is a human condition that is worth your time. It's worth your consideration. Okay, so our training program is based on those two premises. You have political power and that, yes, the governing have human nature that needs to be confined too. So what is important for you to start off with right away in this journey of balancing or stabilizing human government? How many of you have read the car manual that's in your glove box for your car? I would say most people have never even pulled the thing out of their glove box, right? Well, the state constitution...
Only when the idiot light goes on. And the idiot lights are going on Washington all over the place. All the idiot lights are red.
And the power light. The governed naturally will only react when it hurts, when the thing breaks down. Yeah. But I can encourage all of you, if you would look at the manual for your government now, before it breaks down, and it is breaking down, yes, but even before it crashes, you still have an opportunity to fix the system. That's the beauty and the brilliance of our system of government. So there's a couple of things I want to leave your audience with. Number one, yes, there is the federal constitution. You should read it. It's a short document. Get familiar with it. Number two, and just as important, if not in the 21st century, more important, is your state constitution. Pull out your state constitution. Go to the website for your legislature and read your state constitution. It is the manual for operating human government in your local government. So, second or third, you need to identify your county and city constitutions. There are charters. They're called charters or general code constitutions. You can find those things. Go to Google, go to Ask, go to DuckDuckGo, and pull up your state, county, and city constitutions. That is a great first starting point.
And if you want to get more information, you can go to centerforselfgovernance.com. Mark, that's a great starting place. And, of course, as you're talking about, the idea that we have to control government, that is the whole aspect of positive versus negative rights. That is the discussion that we're going to be having when we talk about socialism. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and no, we're not going to do an episode of Top Gear as much as I'd like to see the old Top Gear. That's what that song has become to me. But nevertheless, it's a great song anyway, with or without Jeremy Clarkson. But I miss, miss that group. We're going to talk about the social juvenile warriors. I should say the socialist juvenile warriors here. The Democrats are starting to get very worried about this. Some of the leading Democrats, like James Comey, are freaking out. This guy who pretended all of his life to be a Republican, right? No. He's a Democrat. And even after he gave them his endorsement, hey, if you're a patriot, you got to vote for the Democrats. They said, no, thank you. We don't want you on our side. You become something of a liability. He's still out there begging his fellow Democrats to dump the socialist left. Well, we're going to define what the socialist left is for you here in just a moment in their own words. We'll give them enough rope to hang themselves. But before we do, real quickly, I just want to remind you some of the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We have a new product, Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel, for topical application of nano silver. Very effective at treating minor scrapes, cuts, burns. It is 25% off as a new product. We also have some other products, some of our most popular products, at 50% off. Things like Brain Force, Vitamin Mineral Fusion, BioTruth Selenium, Alpha Power, all of those, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com right now. And take a look. Those are just some of the products that we have on special. We have many more of those, as well as a new InfoWars app. It's very easy to use, very simple, very clean design. And you can listen to the apps wherever you are. Take it along with you. Listen on your phone if you're not in an area where we're on the radio. So it's a great app. It is free, and you can get information about that at InfoWarsStore.com also. Well, let's take a look at what is going on. Again, the person who seems to be taking the lead on the Socialist Party, because that's what the Democrats have become. And it's kind of a, you know, we talk about democratic socialists. Let's understand they're really demographic socialists. They cannot leave behind their identity politics any more than they can leave behind their socialist economic policies. And so, of course, the person who is out front right now is Ocasio-Cortez, along with Bernie Sanders. And here they are together, video six.
I want to thank you all for having me and for showing that girls from the Bronx are welcome everywhere. Working people and Kansans share the same values as working people anywhere else.
You know,
I don't think she's going to be able to sell that
stuff. We must have gotten off at the wrong stop because people told me that Kansas was a Republican state. Doesn't look like that today.
Yeah, can they turn Kansas socialist or not? I don't know. Maybe with all the media and all the late night talk shows, maybe they can do that. But then she had something else to say about what they're going to do with that Republican seat in Kansas. Here's Ocasio-Cortez.
A Democratic socialist, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is taking her national campaign of socialism. She's taking it from here in New York nationwide. But she appears to have her political colors mixed up.
Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be hopping on here, Senator Sanders's account. And we're here in Kansas City to rally for Brent Welder. We're going to flip this seat red in November.
So is she really the new face of the Democratic Party?
Make it red in November. Yeah, that's a little bit of a Freudian slip there, isn't it? You know, they intentionally made Republicans red because red had always been the color of socialism, of communism and so forth. They didn't want to, if they're going to do red and blue, let's see, what are we going to do? We're going to make the Democrats red? That'd be too obvious, wouldn't it? So we're going to make the Republicans red. That got her a little bit confused. And she's got the old fossil alongside of her. You know, this is when we look at Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders, you understand that what we got is old wine and new wineskins, don't we? That's really what this is. As I was talking to Mark here, and he's talking about the fact that the founders of America understood that power subsumed by the government, wielded by those who think that they can control our lives, even if they want to do it in a benevolent way. Once you do that, then that power is going to corrupt people. That was something that was widely understood at the time of the founding of our country. It was understood by social commentators even outside of our country as well. There's Lord Acton who said that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So it wasn't just something that was unique to Americans. However, it was unique to the American style of government. Now, there was a terminology for that. You know, we talk about the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is a document of negative rights. Now, that sounds bad, doesn't it? You know, Barack Obama was very well aware of this. He talked about it at one point in time. He said, oh, you got your negative rights, you got your positive rights. Well, negative rights are things like saying, I have free speech. I have the right to protect myself and so forth. Government, don't make a law abridging my free exercise of religion or my free speech. Government, do not infringe on my ability to keep and bear arms. So negative rights are things that are prohibitions on what the government can do. In other words, these are rights that we maintain, that we have, that we possess, because we're human beings. You know, going back to the Declaration of Independence, we have certain inalienable rights simply because we're human beings, because we are created by our Creator, because of natural rights, if you will. And so those natural rights cannot be infringed upon or negated by the government. That's the concept of negative rights. Now, what the socialists offer us is a system of positive rights. You have a right to this. You have a right to that. You have a right to a job, to $15 an hour minimum wage and so forth, right? A free education. That's what you have a right to, including a free college education now, they say. Well, somebody has to pay for those free education. When they want to open up the borders and have free immigration, who's going to pay for the free education of all those who freely migrate here from the foreign countries? That would be you. And that would mean that your freedom to own property or to be able to enjoy the fruit of your labor is diminished. to the extent that you have to educate the entire world that wishes to come here. So see, there's a price that has to be paid by other people. There is no such thing as a free lunch. And when people keep talking about free stuff, then they're going to get that by taking away your freedom, your liberty. And that's essentially the difference between what we've had here in America and the old wine and the new wineskins of Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders. Although it is surging, they say, and it's got the Democrats, many of them, concerned about it. Even though this young girl, again, who can't talk about this enough, when she went on PBS and talked to Margaret Hoover and talked about the occupation of Palestine. She wants to occupy everything in America. She wants to occupy the ICE offices. She wants to occupy the border. She wants to occupy the airports. Occupy all of America with people from outside of America. But then when she talks about Israel, she doesn't like it. She says, you know, I just think Israel should end the occupation because, like, we're all people. So why should the corporations get all the money by occupying the people? And, you know, you may be confused about that. I think it's confusing. Margaret Hoover thought it was very confusing. She thought, for a while, occupying the corporations get all the money by occupying the people. How does that fit into the Palestinian-Israeli situation? I don't understand. Why should the corporations get all the money by occupying the people? And she says, if Mr. Israel, I think it is his last name, but it may be his given name, wants to help build world peace, he will stop with the settlements. And by that, we mean settlements for anything less than a livable minimum wage. She hasn't any idea what she's talking about. And so Hoover had to remind her that there isn't a Mr. Israel, that Israel is not an individual. Israel is not a corporation. Israel is a country. To which she replies, well, I think I just, I'm not the expert on geopolitics on this issue. Again, as I said, you know, it was, I felt sorry for Miss South Carolina. I felt sorry to have to play that clip again, but it really does fit because Miss South America, which is how she has presented herself now, has exactly the same problems, except we were not looking for anything other than a beauty contest winner with Miss South America. Here is somebody who has the hubris to think that she can run our lives, even though she is this profoundly ignorant. And then we have David Hogg, who tweets out a tweet storm. Hashtag walk away is Russian propaganda. Hashtag walk away is Russian propaganda. Hashtag walk away is Russian propaganda. And repeats it about five or six times more. That was his tweet. That's his statement. These are the people. David Hogg, Ocasio-Cortez, these socialist juvenile warriors who think they should rule our lives, who think we don't know anything, who don't have anything to say, who don't know anything about the past or the current, and they want to control the future. You should be very afraid of this. Very afraid of this. As a matter of fact, she doesn't think that he has a place there. She said 80% male Congress creates blind spots in our legislation. So David Hogg's not going to be eligible for Congress, according to Cortez. We'll be right back.
Keep on lying. Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
I'm David Knight. Just giving you the words of wisdom from David Hogg as he tweeted out and repeated it. Walk away is Russian propaganda. Repeated that about seven or eight times and then finished his tweet by saying, remember this November, we need to vote against Russia. Yes, the socialist juvenile warriors. The Democrat Party colleagues, people like Seth Moulton, a Democrat from Massachusetts, thinks that Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders are too far left for a Democrat from Massachusetts. He emphasized the importance of the party having a diversity of views if they wanted to win and be the majority party in November. Well, see, the trouble is that diversity only works when these people are trying to get into power. Just like Berkeley saying they wanted free speech until Berkeley got power. And then they shut free speech down for everybody else. Well, it works that way with diversity as well. Once they get diversity, they're going to rule out the people who are like Seth Moulton. You know, people who are male or white or whatever. They're not needed in the demographic party. And he's going to find that out. And then Jake Tapper, in terms of reporting that, said, well, somebody else, though, thinks that she is part of the new generation of leaders. Ocasio-Cortez hit the campaign trail with Bernie Sanders this weekend in Kansas. Yes, he did. And as I said before, you know, James Comey freaking out, saying, Democrats, please, please don't lose your minds and rush to the socialist left. This president and his Republican Party are counting on you to do exactly that. Yes, we are. For the first time, James Comey has been right. For the first time, James Comey has told the truth, and the Democrats aren't going to listen to him. That's the beauty of all this stuff, because we know exactly where this is going to lead. You know, even as he is pleading with the Democrats not to rush to the radical left, we see the people who are out there touted as some of the front runners to the presidency, people like Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, doing just that. Here is what Elizabeth Warren had to say. Listen to how she channels and repeats Ocasio-Cortez, who doesn't know what's going on. She had the same mistake last week. I talked about it. Now Elizabeth Warren talks about low unemployment and Americans working two, three, or even four jobs. She even goes beyond what Ocasio-Cortez was saying. Here's Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas.
There was a time when saying, hey, the unemployment rate has gone down. That's a great thing. But, you know, when people are working at minimum wage jobs that won't support them, or they're working two, three, or four jobs to try to pay the rent and keep food on the table, then simply saying the unemployment figures have gone down just doesn't get you there. The way I see this is the lived experiences. Uh-huh.
That's it. She sees it as the lived experience. She feels it. So she feels that people are working two, three, or four jobs. Forget about the actual data. Okay, that's too objective. You know, it's the subjective feeling, you know. She identifies with the unemployed. And she wants America to be unemployed. She wants America to have two, three, or four jobs. And as Ocasio-Cortez put it out last week, she said, well, unemployment is so low because everybody is working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and they can barely feed their jobs. Everybody's got two jobs, feed their family. Everybody's got two jobs, and they can still barely feed their family. And that's exactly what Elizabeth Warren is doing. But she takes that, and she goes, well, not just two jobs. Everybody's working two, three, or four jobs. Maybe they're working 160-hour weeks, according to Elizabeth Warren. Who knows? But it has absolutely no basis in fact. The Bureau of Labor Statistics said that only 5% of the people in the workforce have two jobs. That is not everybody. Even PolitiFact said that was a pants-on-fire rating. But Elizabeth Warren has to go where Ocasio-Cortez goes, and then one step farther. Kamala Harris also wants the federal taxpayer to subsidize California's housing costs, because socialism just doesn't work. And eventually, Harris and Warren and Cortez, you're going to run out of other people's money. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Over the weekend, on Saturday precisely, we had Judicial Watch and Tom Fitton get some information. It was heavily redacted. Nevertheless, we've gotten more information about the basis for the FISA warrant. And this is the gift that keeps on giving. I think that President Trump is going to have to declassify this so we can see the truth. These people are going to continue to cover the stuff up. President Trump tweeted out on Friday and then again on Monday. He said, so we now find out that it was indeed the unverified and the fake dirty dossier that was paid for by crooked Hillary Clinton and the DNC. That was knowingly and falsely submitted to the FISA, which was responsible for starting the totally conflicted and discredited Mueller witch hunt. And then between on Sunday, after the documents were put out there, congratulations to Judicial Watch and Tom Fitton on being successful in getting the Carter Page FISA documents. As usual, they are ridiculously heavily redacted. But they confirm with little doubt the Department of Justice and President Trump put the Department of Justice in air quotes there, folks. Put it in quotes. Where it belongs. It belongs in quotes. I hope President Trump gets this place cleaned up. And I think he's going to have to start with the Attorney General to get something done there. Because, folks, it is not just President Trump that this corrupt Department of Justice has come against. And as we see, even Lisa Page, in a closed hearing, it was testified that even though she's not an employee of the FBI, there were FBI lawyers there trying to stop her from saying certain things, trying to hit the mute button before she could say certain things. I mean, they're working hand in glove to keep this stuff secret from congressional oversight. President Trump is the one who has the power to blow this thing wide open by just declassifying this stuff, as he did the House Intelligence Report. Remember, the Department of Justice, quote unquote, and the FBI did not want that put out there. They said it would compromise security or so forth. And we saw as they classified it top secret, and we saw as President Trump declassified it without any redactions, that there was no problem at all with it. There was no security issues with that. It didn't even really tell us anything new. It just gave some documentary proof for what we already had put together. And it was a cover-up by these people trying to cover up what they had done wrong. There was nothing there that had to do with any national security. It was all about job security for the crooks in the Department of Justice and the FBI. So President Trump is going to have to unredact this. He's going to have to declassify it. He goes on to say the FBI misled the courts. We have seen this with every trial that I have covered. We've seen it with Ross Ulbricht, who is still in jail. We've seen it with some of the people who were the Bundy trial who are still in jail. We saw it with the Bundys themselves. We saw it with the Hammonds. People that President Trump has just pardoned after they were persecuted by the Justice Department, quote unquote, and the Obama administration. This is the way these people run. This is not something that is limited to one case or to two cases or to five cases or to six cases. This isn't something that just started. This is the way these blackmailers and bureaucrats have operated since the days of J. Edgar Hoover, who was a blackmailing bureaucrat himself. The entire federal bureaucracy of instigation is based on this stuff. They instigate terrorist attacks, and then you find out they were the ones who created it from the very beginning, and then they bust somebody on it. They try to entrap people and then catch them at the last minute. Like I said, they're arsonists, firefighters. They set the fire, and then they put it out and proclaim themselves to be heroes. Yet here, they are starting a fire for political purposes. And in the cases that we have covered, with the Bundys, with the Hammonds, with Ross Ulbricht, and others, they have done this for political purposes. President Trump said, repeated Andrew McCarthy, who said, "I said this could never happen. This is so bad that they should be looking at the judges who signed off on this FISA stuff, not just the people who gave it. It is so bad it screams out at you." And, of course, this is the Saturday release of the FBI's redacted FISA report. Zero Hedge points out that cobbled together a combination of facts and innuendo from Page's business dealings in Russia. It took several press reports of varying reliability and, of course, the infamous Clinton-funded Steele dossier. And that was basically it, folks. It was all the dossier. So perhaps the most concerning takeaway, however, is the stark disconnect between the FBI's multiple allegations against Page versus the fact that he hasn't been charged with a single crime after nearly 2 years of FBI investigation. You understand? They identified him as a very dangerous spy. They flat out accused him of being a Russian spy. They said he was recruited by the Kremlin. Yet after 2 years of investigation, they haven't charged him with anything. Why? Because he didn't do anything. Because this is all manufactured evidence. You know, when we start to look at this, Chuck Ross of the Daily Caller said the FBI represented to a federal judge that investigators knew for certain that Carter Page met with Igor Sechin and Divakin, if I'm pronouncing the Russian names right, except the FISA app acknowledges this intel came from the Steele dossier. And the FBI has acknowledged that the dossier was not verified. And then you have the circular evidence aspect of this. The way that this was shopped around by Brennan. He couldn't get Clapper even interested in this. And so to try to move this around, he writes a letter to Harry Reid and says, oh, look, we've got these newspaper reports, which they had ceded to the newspaper. So he leaks this information out there. And again, you know, it would be kind of like parallel construction, except that when we're talking about parallel construction, that would be evidence that the government illegally obtains because they use a stingray device or something like that to eavesdrop on people illegally without a warrant. And so what they do is they drop hints to some people in law enforcement and say, hey, check this out and so forth. And so they use parallel construction, and the people in local law enforcement then get a legitimate search warrant and go and take a look at it. But the way that they got there was through parallel construction. But this is circular construction. They plant stories in the newspaper. Then they take those planted stories and they come back and say, oh, look. Or they have one of their people, like, you know, somebody in London, whisper to a CIA operative or to Brennan, I suspect that something is going on. It's like, oh, look, somebody in London told me this. And so it's all of that. But the only documentary stuff they have is the dossier. As Paul Sperry said, in all the FISA apps filed to spy on Trump advisor page, there is no evidentiary source listed other than source number one. And source number one is Christopher Steele. There is no source number two. There's no source number three. Just a single source. Source number one. It also reveals that FBI agent Peter Strzok lied when he said that he had nothing to do with the FISA application, when in fact, he used Carter Page's September 2016 letter to Comey defending himself against a Yahoo News article that was written by Michael Isikoff, who used information obtained directly from Steele as a pretext to open the investigation on Page. See how the circular references work? They leaked the information to Michael Isikoff from Steele. And then he defends himself against it and say, look, he's defending himself against this, so we have to come back against him. And here we are. The FBI's use, as Zierhead just pointing out, the FBI's use of flimsy, uncorroborated evidence to support spying on Page, combined with the fact that a three-month extension was granted despite the fact that it was obvious by June 2017 that he wasn't a Russian agent. And he still hasn't been charged with anything. Yet they still continue the investigation. And so when we look at this, what is the takeaway from Adam Schiff? Let's play video clip of Adam Schiff, because he thinks he's got something else on President Trump, and that's this.
And I think actually if the performance that we had in Helsinki took place before those applications were filed, I think that whole interchange with Putin would have been a central exhibit in the FISA applications.
There you go. So you didn't need the dirty dossier. You had a president meeting with the Russian president at a summit. That's enough to show that he's a Russian agent. That is the insanity of the left. They would use anything to try to take Trump down. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Take a look at the untouchables. Brennan, Comey, Hayden, Clapper, and others. Yeah, these people are untouchable. No matter what they do, they cannot be touched. And as we just heard, Adam Schiff saying, well, if we'd had that Helsinki meeting, we would have had something else here to get a FISA search warrant on him for. Like, are you serious? We got Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, saying that the meetings between the U.S. and Russian presidents should be normal again. Yeah, we should make that normal. Let's make America normal again. MANA. Instead of MAGA, we could have MANA. Because America is not normal. We have these psychotic people on the left who say that meeting with Russians who have so many nuclear weapons is an act of treason. And they are pushing very hard for war. And like Adam Schiff saying, oh, you know, we would have put him up on charges as a treasonous traitor. This is Adam Schiff, a congressman. That's how pathetic they've become. Don't tell me that Ocasio-Cortez can't get elected in that party. The mental illness is so widespread. Merkel said, in principle, it's always good for everyone when there's talks, particularly when there's talks between these two countries that have, as President Trump pointed out at the Helsinki conference, these two countries have 90% of the world's nuclear bombs. Do you think that we want to try to exacerbate relations there? I understand the military-industrial complex needs money. I understand it. I understand you guys have got an agenda. You might even have a bigger, longer-term agenda of not just getting lots of money. You may want to just really blow the world up. You might just be that crazy. But the rest of us aren't. And we're not going to fall for that gaslighting. Merkel went on to say, I think it must once again become normal for Russia and American presidents to meet. It has always been normal. Even Obama did it. Even, by the way, Hillary Clinton did it. Here she is trashing President Trump over the weekend for doing what Angela Merkel, I thought she respected the European Union leader, because that's really what she is. That's not her official title, but let's understand that Germany runs that thing. She's supposed to bow down and worship these globalists like Merkel. But even Merkel says, I think we ought to have some talks, but not Hillary Clinton. Here's what she had to say.
Great mystery is why the president has not spoken up for our country.
Yes.
And we saw that most clearly in this recent meeting with Putin. We don't know what was said in the room where just
the
two of them.
Coat.
Putin is basically telling the world what was decided. You know, he has been giving press statements. He's calling in Russian ambassadors to other countries. He's reaching out to other leaders. And he's basically saying, well, here's what we decided. And we're hearing crickets from the White House. There are some tech experts in Silicon Valley with whom I have met who say that, you know, maybe what they'll do this next time is to really disrupt the actual election. Shut down the servers that you send results to. Interfere with the operation of voting machines, because still too many of them are linked to the internet. So there, we are still very vulnerable.
There you go. There's Grandma's Conspiracy Corner. They should have left her wandering around in the woods listening to the real crickets. There she is in her house coat. Let's tell Hillary what happened. You know, that was the name of her book. And she clearly doesn't know what happened, or she's just lying to everybody. But let's remind her of what happened in 2014. As we pointed out on InfoWars, she met with Vladimir Putin. She met with him privately. She even admitted this in her previous book, before the book What Happened, that she doesn't want you to know what happened. She had a book before that called Hard Choices. Was she trying to brag about all of her, you know, name-dropping all these different world leaders that she met with? Well, she met with Vladimir Putin. She explained in Hard Choices that she met him in Moscow. She asked him what he's doing to save the tigers in Siberia. Because, of course, this is the pressing question on everyone's mind. It isn't about what are you doing to avert thermonuclear war? Or it isn't, why are you interfering in America with cybercrime? No, it's none of that stuff. It's like, what are you doing to save the tigers in Siberia? He looked up in surprise. I guess he didn't realize that Hillary Clinton would be so irrelevant. She said, now I had his attention. So he took her to his private office. You know, kind of like Monica Lewinsky. No, it's not like that at all. Hillary Clinton reveals how she bonded with Putin. Yeah, Mrs. Bond. He says, Hillary Bond, over tigers, and how he told her of the dramatic moment that his mother rose from the dead. This was the headlines of the Daily Mail back in June of 2014. And so he takes her aside. I don't know that he told her about the tigers at all. I think he took her in, and being a master spy, KGB agent that he is, he quickly moved her concerns from that vital issue of Siberian tigers to a war story. Now, his father came back. He saw this pile of bodies. He saw his wife's shoes on a pair of feet sticking out from the pile, and thought that was his wife. They wouldn't let him get over there, but he insisted. He grabs her in his arms, and as he looks at her, he realizes that she's still alive. She's not dead yet. So he nursed her back to health, and that was 8 years before Vlad was born, Vladimir Putin. And so here we are, you know, and just a few years later, we don't know why she didn't speak out for our country. and why she didn't do something about that with Vladimir Putin. But they are taking action in Washington, D.C. As Jonathan Turley points out, there will be no white Russians served at Trump's hotel if these people have their way. he says, is there a difference between resistance and ridiculousness? No, I don't think so. He says the line was crossed again by Trump critics in Washington after a D.C. advisory neighborhood commission. These are people, busybodies who have nothing else to do, announced a petition to pull the Trump International Hotel liquor license. And the reason, they said, was because D.C. law only allows individuals of good character to have a liquor license. And obviously, President Trump, if he would meet with Vladimir Putin like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and every president since Truman, obviously that means that he's not a person of good character, because that would put him on the FISA watch list if Adam Schiff had his way. And the interesting thing that Jonathan Turley points out is that two things. Number one, this group, this commission, doesn't even have jurisdiction over this geographical area of Washington. That's a different one. This is ANC 4C. The other people are the ANC 2C, and that ANC doesn't stand for African National Congress, but it might as well, because they're a bunch of little communists as well. But he said also there were two former judges who signed this utter nonsense. He said it might be cathartic for them, it might be popular for them, but it is entirely meritless, as is the rest of this Russia paranoia. And now we have more allegations from the undocumented lobbyist, Russian agent Putina. And we'll have those for you when we come back. And we'll tell you that what Trey Gowdy has said about Adam Schiff. Trey Gowdy is an interesting character. He seems to be playing both sides of the fence now in a very interesting way. He has some very interesting comments, and we'll give you both of those comments. And we'll show you both faces of Trey Gowdy when we come back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We have some very important information about President Trump and the Federal Reserve. It's an op-ed piece by Dick Bove that I want to get to. I want to finish up with what happened with the FISA revelation that we had over the weekend and the back and forth of different people and where we are going with this Russian conspiracy theory stuff in terms of the election. You just heard that from Hillary Clinton. She said, well, I think it's quite possible that the Russians may be going to flip votes and everything, you know, coming up this next election. Of course, that's what they've been implying all along. And then they will imply that, oh, the Russians hacked the election. As Chris Cuomo said, they hacked the election. It was an act of war and so forth and so on. While you look at the fine print that Rosenstein puts on his indictment of the Dirty Dozen, and he says, no, they didn't change anything in the election. And no votes were changed. And so forth. They always will put that in as a footnote after they plant the idea in everybody's head that the votes were changed. But I think as we get to the election, as we look at the electronic voting system that is in place, I think it is going to be a cyber hacking contest between the DNC and the GOP. And if either one of them gets caught, or to the extent that they get caught, they're going to blame it on the Russians, just as President Obama's Homeland Security were the ones who hacked into the state boards of elections. Don't you remember? Georgia and others say, well, wait a minute, somebody's trying to break in. And they traced it back. They exposed them, and then finally they admitted it and everything. Well, now there's no more talk about that. It was only the Russians. It was only the Dirty Dozen who did that. That didn't happen from Homeland Security. Oh, yes, it did. Oh, yes, it did. We're going to get into, let's take a look at the other part of this as well. And that, of course, is this 29-year-old Russian agent, Putina, who, like Paul Manafort, has been accused of being an undocumented lobbyist. Do you remember when Paul Manafort and they started talking about this? Oh, we're going to come after him because he didn't register properly. And everybody said, oh, that's going to affect all the lobbyists with all these K Street companies. They're scrambling, and a lot of them shut down house and so forth. And so that's going to affect the Podestas because they lobbied for the same people and they didn't register just like Manafort did. And so, however, when you look at Mueller, what's he going to do? He gave immunity to the Podesta brothers so that he could use them to come after Manafort for doing the same thing. So, yeah, it isn't going to be, you know, when we first heard this, it's like, well, if he comes after Manafort, he's going to have to come after everybody. No, he's going to give the guy even that worked with him that went to work for Bernie Sanders. He gets immunity. The Podesta brothers get immunity so they can come after Manafort, so they can flip him to come after Trump. And they put Manafort in jail in solitary confinement, just like they have this 29-year-old girl. Now they're saying that there are additional meetings that have shown up. At first, they only wanted to talk about it and made the big splash for several days, which is the attention span that we have of our fruit fly media. It was all about this Russian spy meeting with conservative groups, people like the NRA and CPAC and so forth. Well, now we find out that she met with Obama Treasury officials. You know, she was working, had a job with Alexander Torshin. He was then the Russian Central Bank deputy governor. There was an organization called the Center for National Interest, a Washington foreign policy think tank that supports efforts to improve U.S.-Russian relations. Obviously spies, right? Obviously traitors. Because anybody that wants detente, an easing of strained relations between the two countries that have 90% of the world's nuclear, well, those people are obviously traitors. No, this is the sane way to conduct foreign policy. Instead of the shrill hysteria that we now get from Adam Schiff and Hillary Clinton for doing the same things that Hillary Clinton and Obama and all the rest of them did. But yeah, another example of the fact that these things were happening. They actually had people meeting. They had the U.S. Treasury meeting with the their equivalent in the Russian government. And she had been hired as an employee. Still, nothing there. And again, you're going to tell me that you're going to lock her and Paul Manafort up because they didn't fill out a piece of paper, dot all their I's and cross all the T's, when you want to bring in people by the millions and you want to call them undocumented, and it's okay, it doesn't matter? You know, just let these undocumented lobbyists go. What difference does it make, right? Some laws matter, and some laws only matter when they are broken or bent by conservatives. They can be completely burned down by liberal Democrats, and we don't pay any attention. Like our national security laws, everything we have in America is subservient to the interest of national security, except Hillary Clinton and her emails. We can just wave all that stuff. Let's play video clip number two. We got Trey Gowdy. And you heard earlier Adam Schiff saying, well, if we'd had this Helsinki summit, well, that would have been something we could have gotten him on with the FISA. Well, that was as much of a conspiracy theory fantasy crime as this nonsense dirty dossier. But here's what Trey Gowdy has to say about Adam Schiff.
I have not seen one scintilla of evidence that this president colluded, conspired, confederated with Russia. And neither has anyone else, or you may rest assured Adam Schiff would have leaked it. So that's why they moved off of collusion onto obstruction of justice, which is now their current preoccupation.
And how do you obstruct justice if there was no crime of collusion, right? You have to have a crime. So everything is upside down and backwards. The way these special counsels were supposed to work, they were supposed to go to the attorney general. Somebody said, we got evidence of a crime. It can't be investigated without the self-interest of the Department of Justice and the FBI involved here. So we need to have a special counsel. And it appears that's the case with every crime now. They're so self-interested and so politicized that we should probably have a special counsel to investigate every single issue because these people are too corrupt and too politicized to honestly investigate anything. But they would have evidence of a crime. They would go to the attorney general. He would create a three-judge panel. The three-judge panel would look at the evidence. If they thought they agreed with that, then they would select a special counsel, and he would keep reporting to them his progress in it. But as he said, you know, they've moved on from collusion to obstruction of justice. Well, you should have had a crime there. And if there's no evidence of a crime of collusion, and Rod Rosenstein said that yet again when he did his Dirty Dozen indictment, then how could you have obstruction of justice? And so he says, if there was any crimes, believe me, Adam Schiff would have leaked it by now. But then he goes on to say this. He says, here's what we'll never know. We'll never know whether or not the FBI had enough with or without the dossier, the unvetted DNC-funded dossier, because they included it. And everyone who reads this FISA application sees the amount of reliance that they placed on this product funded by Hillary's campaign and the DNC. Okay, so we understand that. And he says, But he just told us that if they had any crimes anywhere, they would have come after President Trump. And why wouldn't they if they'd had any other evidence of anything other than the Hillary-funded and DNC-funded, which Hillary funded the DNC as well. She bought them out of bankruptcy with her ill-gotten gains. If all they had was the if they had anything else, they would have used it in the same way that if they'd found any crimes, they would have exposed, they would have leaked those crimes by now. That's the strange thing about Trey Gowdy, is the way that he keeps circling around. Well, on this hand, we have this. On the other, same thing he did with the Benghazi investigation. The NSA is setting up a task force to fight Russian cyber attacks. And I want to ask you, you heard Hillary Clinton say they're going to hack the election. We just know that's what's going to happen now. I would ask you this. Why is it that just now they have decided that the NSA is going to be interested in Russian cyber attacks? Why did they wait until July 2018 to get interested in this? They didn't realize that the Russians were our enemies? They didn't realize it for the last 2 years that they've been doing this investigation? They didn't realize it? They didn't realize it before then? The NSA and U.S. Cyber Command have created a special unit. It comes as election meddling accusations keep being hurled at the Kremlin. And, of course, these are accusations of what they are about to do. And as I said before, they are preparing a Russian scapegoat for the hacking that they're going to do. They have created this electronic voting infrastructure, from the easily hackable machines to the enterprise-wide corruption of getting in at the higher level where the votes are tabulated, where they can even put the viruses and so forth into the machines. They have created this vulnerable infrastructure that is so ripe for hacking. And now it is going to be a contest between the DNC and the GOP. And when they get caught, they're going to blame the Russians. Welcome back. So I was just saying, they have now set up some security to pay attention to Russian hacking, when for 2 years, that's supposedly what they were looking at. Now we just have set up a task force. Here we had the Obama cyber chief, Michael Daniel, confirm that there was a stand down order from Obama saying stand down on paying attention to Russian cyber attacks. We had director of the CIA, John Brennan, was hacked. Do you remember this? He was hacked by a 15-year-old kid from the UK. Oh, these guys are such master spies, aren't they? And then you had the U.S. Office of Personnel Management suffer the biggest hack in history. You had the personal data of 21.5 million employees, military service people, former federal government staffers, all of that compromised. You had the CIA, the NSA Vault 7 compromise that showed that they could actually, we had the manuals that were leaked out by WikiLeaks, and then eventually the information was leaked out, the actual code of how they did it. But the manuals showed that they could mask themselves as any foreign actor, especially the usual suspects of Russia, China, North Korea, Syria, and so forth. They could make it look like they were anybody. And, of course, you can't tell on the Internet where these things are coming from. They can route them through various places. So the whole thing is a cloak and mirrors, isn't it? We had Brennan, who himself hacked the Senate in revenge for investigating CIA terror. Remember that? Remember when he went after the Senate staffers? Remember when Dianne Feinstein was absolutely incensed? They're looking at me? How dare them? Yeah, well, he denied that he did that, and then later he had to retract that because they proved that they did it. So this is the smoke and the mirrors and the lies and the spy versus spy stuff that is going on all the time. Now we have the House Judiciary Chairman, Bob Goodlatte, saying he wants to have John Brennan himself testify. Here's Goodlatte.
Lots of questions for John Brennan, and he will definitely be sought by the committees for an interview. This is an extremely disturbing thing to see both he and James Comey, supposedly impartial government officials carrying out their jobs in very important areas in intelligence gathering and law enforcement, express the kind of extreme bias that they've shown now, which I think reflects quite accurately on what they were doing back in 2016.
So he's on your list of witnesses to have in to interview
them? Absolutely.
Yes. And then this bombshell revelation from Clapper telling us that Obama was behind the whole thing. Here's that clip, video clip number four.
If it weren't for President Obama, we might not have done the intelligence community assessment that we did that set off a whole sequence of events which are still unfolding today, notably Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. President Obama is responsible for that, and it was he who tasked us to do that intelligence community assessment in the first place.
Remember that? Hear that? President Obama tasked us to do that intelligence community assessment in the first place. And, of course, this goes back to what was being gradually unveiled. And, you know, we get this information and then we understand what it means. And then we have to pretend for months that we don't understand what it means because we got Adam Schiff out there spreading his lies and, you know, letting the shift hit the fan. We had a text message, of course, between Strzok and Lisa Page, one of them, taking place after Strzok had come back from London. Because, you know, London is very much involved. MI5, MI6, these people over there are very much involved with Langley in creating this. He comes back from London, and as part of Operation Crossfire Hurricane, he referred to the White House running an unknown investigation. And here you are now, Clapper is saying, yeah, it was President Obama responsible for that. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have done the intelligence community assessment. So Wall Street Journal asks, was Brennan's action the real treason here? Obama's CIA director, John Brennan, says that yes, it was him, egging on the FBI's probe of Trump and Russia from the very beginning. And I talked about this earlier, the circular aspect of it. Oh, look, we've got this information in the newspapers, and we got this dirty dossier that was paid for by Hillary Clinton and her bought and paid for DNC. You know, we talk about election hacking Democrats. I mean, how gaslighted are you that you can't understand that primary, you want to talk about the election being hacked? The primary was hacked by Hillary Clinton. It was bought and paid for. She owned the DNC. She had that nomination sewn up with the superdelegates. Remember all that talk about the superdelegates? Remember how upset you were about that? You know, it was a whistleblower, according to William Binney, who actually did a technical analysis of the files. But of course, we don't want to, you know, get into any facts or anything because, you know, like Elizabeth Warren and Ocasio-Cortez, they want to imagine that everybody's got 2, 3, or 4 jobs. That's why the unemployment rate is so low. So forget about any measurements or objective metrics that anybody comes up with. Just like you can forget about William Binney, even though he was technical head of the NSA globally for several decades. You know, just disregard that. It's the way they feel. They feel that the election was hacked. And if you press them on, they say, well, no, votes were changed. Well, votes were changed in terms of the delegate votes. Because over and over again, we saw that even though Hillary Clinton would lose to Bernie Sanders, she would get more delegates because of the superdelegate fraud. That's why you had internal whistleblowers of the DNC expose this. And yet what happened was she came up with this Russian conspiracy theory to cover herself and the DNC. And she exacerbates relationships between the U.S. and Russia just for that own selfish political reason. And the rank-and-file Democrats are too gaslighted and too stupid to see this. I just don't have any patience to explain this to them yet again. Let's do a quick plug here for what we've got at InfoWarsStore.com, and then I want to talk to you about President Trump taking over the Federal Reserve. Yes, we have a commentary by Dick Bove, who says he thinks that's what he's going to do. And I'll tell you why he might want to do that. I certainly don't want to say the Federal Reserve even in existence, but we'll take a look at why that might happen. First of all, we have 25% off of our new product, Super Silver Wound Dressing. It is a nano silver that is in a gel, a topical gel, so you can use it for cuts, burns, scrapes. It is now 25% off. We also have 50% off of Brain Force, Vitamin Mineral Fusion, Bio True Selenium, and Alpha Power. So of our most popular products, my favorite supplement, of course, is Brain Force. You can get 50% off of all of those. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. It's what funds this program. Now, finally, real quickly, we got a little over 2 minutes here. Dick Bove is saying, talks about Trump and says, I don't necessarily agree with raising rates. Let me explain to you that as President Trump says, we're going to equalize the unfair trade between the United States and China by raising tariffs. Wall Street panics, says this is a trade war. President Trump says this has been going on for decades. And you guys never complained about it. If they've got a 10-to-1 advantage, if their tariffs are 10 times higher than our tariffs on the same products, that is a trade war by definition. What he's trying to do is equalize things. Now, as he raises the tariffs, let's say that he raises the tariffs from 2.5% on cars to 25% on cars to get equal to what China has on us going the other way or any product. If that were to happen, they can subvert that by devaluing their currency, which they're in the process of doing. Or we can have the Federal Reserve undo that because Wall Street doesn't like that idea. Big business doesn't like that idea. So the Federal Reserve can make the dollar stronger, or the Chinese central bank can make the yuan weaker. And they can essentially nullify any attempts that President Trump has to try to equalize tariffs. And so this guy is saying he's got multiple reasons to do this. He says, first of all, he's against regulation. And the Federal Reserve is nothing but regulation. It's regulation of our economy. And he says, by raising interest rates and stopping the growth in the money supply, the Federal Reserve is standing in the way of further growth in the United States. So President Trump wants growth in the economy. He wants deregulation. And the Federal Reserve is opposing him in this. And so he says, here's some reasons why he might take control of the Federal Reserve. He says, first of all, he can. He said, the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve is required to have 7 members. It has 3. 2 of the current governors were put into place in their place by President Trump. 2 more have been nominated and are waiting confirmation. In other words, except for one that was not put in by President Trump, it's possible that 6 or 7 board members could be put in place by President Trump. Number 2, regulation. Following the Dodd-Frank Act, which was a big giveaway to big business and big bankers, the Fed was given enormous power to regulate the banking industry. President Trump would like to see that go away. And number 3, killing economic growth. In the second quarter of this year, the growth in non-seasonally adjusted money supply has been 0. The money supply did not grow at all. So you see the power of the Federal Reserve? The power of the Federal Reserve is that by affecting the money supply, by affecting the interest rates, they can affect the value of the dollar. They can throttle the economy. They can nullify President Trump's tariffs. Audit the Fed. End the Fed.